ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। प्रभु लीव इट ओपन, हॉट इन हियर। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, text 8. It's a good one. Rasaha aham apsu konteya. Rasoham apsu konteya. Prabhasmi sasi suryayaho. Prabhasmi sasi suryayaho. Pranabaha sarva vedeshu. Pranabaha sarva vedeshu. Shabdaha ke parusham nrishu. Shabdaha ke parusham nrishu. Rasoham apsukonteya. Prabhasmi sasi shriyayoho. Pranava-sarva-vedeshu, shabda-ke-parusham-drushu, rasoham-apsukonteya, prabhashmi-sashishuyayahu, pranava-sarva-vedeshu, shabda-ke-parusham-drushu. Rasoham apsukonteya. Prabhasmi sasi suryayaho. Oham apsukonteya. Prabhasmi sasi suryayaho. Prabhnavat sarva vedeshu, sabdakke parusham drishu, rasoham apsukonteya, prabhasmi sasishuyayaho, pranavat sarva vedeshu, sabdakke parusham drishu, rasoham apsukonteya, prabhasmi sasishuyayaho, pranavat sarva vedeshu, shabdakke parusham drishu, rasa, taste, aham, I, apsu, in water, konteya, O son of Kunti, Prabha, the light. Ashmi, I am. Sashi Shriyayaho, of the moon and the sun. Pranabaha, the three letters A, U, M. Om. Sarva, in all. Vedeshu, the Vedas. Shabdaha, sound vibration. Ke, in the ether. Parusham, ability. Nrishu, in men. O son of Kunti, I am the taste of water, the light of the sun and the moon, the syllable Om in the Vedic mantras. I am the sound in ether and the ability in man. Purport, Srila Prabhupada, hard labor purport, nectarine. This verse explains how the Lord is all-pervasive by his diverse material and spiritual energies. The Supreme Lord can be preliminarily perceived by his different energies, and in this way he is realized impersonally. As the demigods in the sun is the person and is perceived by his all-pervading energy, the sunshine, so the Lord, although in his eternal abode, is perceived by his all-pervading diffusive energies. The taste of water is the active principle of water. No one likes to drink seawater because the pure taste of water is mixed with salt. Attraction for water depends on the purity of the taste, and this pure taste is one of the energies of the Lord. The impersonalist perceives the presence of the Lord in water by its taste, and the personalist also glorifies the Lord for his kindly supplying tasty water to quench man's thirst. That is the way of perceiving the Supreme. Practically speaking, there is no conflict between personal and impersonalism. One who knows God knows that the impersonal conception and the personal conception are simultaneously present in everything, and that is there is no contradiction. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya established his sublime doctrine, Achintya Bheda and Abheda Tattva, simultaneousness, one and difference. The light of the sun and the moon is originally emanating from the Brahma Jyoti, which is the impersonal effulgence of the Lord. And pranav, or the omkar, transcendental sound, is the beginning of every Vedic hymn. Addresses the Supreme Lord. Because the impersonalists are very much afraid of addressing the Supreme Lord, Krishna, by his innumerable names, they prefer to vibrate the transcendental sound omkar. But they do not realize that omkar is the sound representation of Krishna. The jurisdiction of Krishna consciousness extends everywhere, and one who knows Krishna consciousness is blessed. Those who do not know Krishna are an illusion. And so knowledge of Krishna is liberation and ignorance of him is bondage. Nice. Om, see, Om, Yam Brahma Varunindra Rudra Muranti Divyastaver Vede Sangapada Kramopani Sadir Ghayantiyam Samagaha Dhyanna Vastita Chakatena Manasa Pashantiyam Yogino Yashantam Navidhu Sura Sura Ganadevatasme Namaham. Om apavitra pavitro va sarvavastam gatopi va yasmare pundari kaksham sarvibhyantaraha suchi Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu. So this chapter, seventh chapter, it's called Knowledge of the Absolute. And this chapter is very, very much moving into what is devotional service, giving us a hint of God. In the first six chapters, Krishna sets the field for what's coming up. And then there's a summary in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita basically, because our first teaching, when you ever talk to anybody, we don't go right to Krishna. That's another step. Our first basis, April, I think it was April. I was here in February, March, right? And after that, then I've listened to every lecture of Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita. And some of the, like this verse is about seven or eight, just on this verse alone. And what I got from hearing all of these classes, and you know, it's maybe not 100% attentive, I may be washing the dishes or doing my deity worship or cutting vegetables, but I'm hearing. But what I got from this whole summary, basically, of the Bhagavad Gita from just hearing was what Prabhupada was pounding. You are not this body. And that is what the Bhagavad Gita is coming across. It's the beginning teaching. The five teachings of Bhagavad Gita. Five teachings which are everything. These things include everything. Everything is included in the five teachings of Bhagavad Gita. One of them is that, who are we? Who are we? We have to know who we are. Then we have to know what is God. And we must know what is karma. We must know what is this material nature. And we must understand time factor. These are the five preliminary teachings of Bhagavad Gita. And in order to assimilate all that, one has to practice the process of bhakti yoga. It is not just a mental gymnastic exercise, or one may be, you know, take it casually, armchair Bhagavad Gita man. There was a fellow in Bombay. I don't really know this man's name, but I wanted to punch him out so many times. If you hear him in the Srimad Bhagavatam on the morning walks, maybe you know what I'm talking about. He's very irritating. He's always chuckling with Srila Prabhupada, always quoting some Bhagavad Gita verse. Some Indian man. Was that Dr. Patel? Yes, Dr. Patel. And he thought he was equal to Srila Prabhupada. He could quote a few verses and he would finish some of Prabhupada's verses. And then one day Srila Prabhupada said to him, Griheshu Griyamirinam. Everybody is absorbed in the Griha. And Srutavyadini Rajendra Niranam Shanti Sahasrasa Apashyatam Atmatatvam Griheshu Griyamirinam. That everybody's talking, but nobody's talking about Atmatatva. And they're absorbed in the family. So he said, I am not having any relations with my wife anymore. And he probably said, yes, but you're absorbed in your absorbed in your family members. You're still in the Grihavrata, you know. But the point was, he thought he knew something of Bhagavad Gita, but he had no detachment. So he could not realize or assimilate any of these teachings. The end of that story is one day Prabhupada had enough, because he was friendly with him, but he pushed it too far. So he had the devotees carry the Krishna book, and walking down the beach in Juhu, reading the Krishna book whenever they'd see him coming. Prabhupada, start reading. So he couldn't interrupt. And after a few days of this reading, every time they'd see him, probably start reading. Krishna book. He got the hint. So he's kind of backed off. So the point is to know this Bhagavad Gita, and to know these factors of Bhagavad Gita is this begins, like I was saying, in the third chapter, it begins with what is karma and what is karmic reaction. And now, so many so-called devotees, because it's a very, very broad word, devotee. You have your Kanishtha, you have your Madhyam, you have your Uttam. And amongst the Kanishtas, it's a very broad spectrum of Kanishtas. You have actually Kanishtas who are following the regulated principles. They are beginning of the devotional life, and they are trying to assimilate this knowledge. And then you have others that are called devotees, they put tilak on and so forth, but they're committing so many karmic reactions. They're stealing, they're lying, they haven't understood that every action has a reaction. And they haven't even passed the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, but yet they want to sit down and give Srimad Bhagavatam class. So, karma, and then transcendental knowledge, and karma in action, and then Sankhya. And now Krishna begins to explain how to understand and realize Him. So for those who are the impersonalist, because basically we are impersonalist because we haven't seen Krishna. We see His deity form, but at heart we don't believe it fully. Until Krishna reveals Himself, we will not be able to. We may believe, we may have firm faith on that, but Krishna, as He reveals Himself, that faith increases, and to the full point when we have the darshan, when Krishna reveals Himself. So, in the meanwhile, We can must learn to have the one thing. One thing must be there in all dealings and in all of our character, and that will bring us to a better level, and that will make us a genuine, at least, human being, if not a devotee. And it must be there. And that's gratitude. There must be gratitude. And it starts with the children. In the old culture, even in the primal cultures, like in, if you go to Hawaii, they always have things for uncle and the what do you call them? The elders, the old Indian, American Indians. And in India, the elders always touch the feet of the older people in the family and listen to their advice. And because there is gratitude, there must be gratitude to the parents of what they, the child, they must feel what might they have sacrificed. They took care of me when I couldn't take care of myself. They went out and they worked, and they brought all of, they've given me all these clothes and books and other things for so many years. And now I'm a teenager and I tell them, go to hell. Don't tell me what to do. I can do everything myself. But still, they come to take some money to do those things. They don't educate them in gratitude. So the gratitude, if it is there, and one applies that to Krishna consciousness. There is a story that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta used to tell. Very nice story. There was a crow, and there was a poor man. And the poor man would leave his village daily because he had no work, he had no money, and he would wander in this forest and sit on one big granite stone. So one day, this blackbird came, and he said, what you doing? He said, I have nothing to do, just hanging out. He said, well, I have nothing to do either. I already ate my fill, so can I be your friend? Okay. So daily they would meet at this granite rock and just give each other some company. So he would always complain to the crow, oh, my life is so miserable, I don't have anything, I don't even have a wife, I can't afford one, I don't have a house, this and that. So one day the crow said, look it, I know these rakshasas. And this type are not, I call them rakshasas, they are called yakshas, sorry, the yakshas. They have mystical powers. He said, I will go ask them to help you, because they are friendly with me. So after they left this stone and he went home, there was a big house sitting where he used to live. And there were these maids inside and beautiful women and jewels. And he went in and, oh, master, this is, someone has come and given you, they said, this is all yours. So he was very, wow, okay. So he did not go to the granite rock for some years because now he's a wealthy man. So he was walking one day through this forest and he came upon where he used to sit with the granite rock. And the crow was there. And he said, hey, buddy, how you doing? You like what my friends have done for you? And he said, you? What did you do for me? He said, my friends, I talked to them and they created all of this for you. He said, oh, you get out of the way. They told us, so chase that bird away, blackbird, crow, low-class bird. So the bird became angry and he went back to the yakshas. And when he came back, they met him there. They destroyed his house and they killed him. And they generally are also rakshasas, they will eat you. But they said, we don't want to eat him because he stinks of ingratitude, ingracious. He has no gratitude. And we don't like meat that from somebody that has no gratitude. Let the dogs have him. So they threw him in the street, and the dog smelled him and said, No gratitude on this one. We don't want him. So even the dogs wouldn't eat him. So because there is no gratitude, he forgot what someone had done for him, and he had no appreciation. So here we begin, Rasoham Apsukonteya. The previous verse, Krishna is saying, Mata Parataram Nanyat, everything rests on me. Kinchidasti, just like the pearls are strung on a string, everything depends upon me. Krishna is explaining it with this example. And then he goes on now to explain what he means by these pearls. Each pearl, basically on that strand, is one of Krishna's ways to remember him. Now we have something. Now we have something for a person. Let us say we've never read Bhagavad Gita. This is our first reading. And you've been around the world. And you've read so many literatures. You will be like surprised. Wow, this is the first thing I've ever read where they're telling me how to think of God. Because there's no scripture. There's no other type of religious scripture or philosophical presentation where they tell you how to think of God. They tell you there is God. They tell you to you love God, or someone says, I love God. But how do you love someone you don't know? You can't love an object. You know, you really can't love the flower unless you relate it with Krishna, that this is Krishna's flower. This is Krishna's energy. Punya Ganda Prithivyam. In the next verse he says, I am the smell of the earth. I am the fragrance. So here, raso, and the word ras. We have rasa everywhere. Bhakti rasa mrita sindhu. Rasa. Everything is rasa. You know, rasa lila. Rasa nam chintamani Krishna chaitanya rasa vigraha. Purna Siddha Nitya Mukta Abhinnatvam Namanamino. This is the holy name. Nam Chintamani. It is a touchstone. Krishna Chaitanya. It is full of life. It is the form of the Lord. Chaitanya. It is the life force of all the devotees. Vigraha. And it has a form. It's Krishna's form. Chaitanya Rasa and Rasa. Rasa means, Prabhupada explains in the Nectary Devotion that the word rasa, very hard to translate into English language, because it has such a meaning that English, it's very hard to put it in one word. So we may put it in a whole category of words, like relationship, a mood, a mellow, a feeling, a moonlight night where everything is mystical. The word means taste. There's a pleasure in all of these things. So there's a taste. And when there's a taste, a rasa, you know, raso hum, Krishna says, that's me. Whatever taste you have, that's me. Prabhupada had said before that even the drunkard, when he drinks his wine, if he remembers, this taste is Krishna. It may be in the mode of tamagun, but tamagun is also Krishna, but not Krishna. But if he remembers that, Prabhupada said one day he will become a most saintly person. He'll have to give up the wine though, at some point, to become that saintly person. But I know they have bars in America, water bars. You know? Have you heard of that? They have water bars where there's maybe 500 different kinds of waters from around the world. You can even get a glass of Ganga water. And glacier water from New Zealand, glacier water from here and there, and mountain stream water from Colorado, and Swiss mountain water. And so people go in and just drink water. And they taste the different waters. so many waters from so many places have a different taste. And when you taste a good water, just like, let's say you're drinking some sort of tap water, or, you know, I know personally I've had the one filter that I drink the water through. It tastes pretty good. But then I'll go and I'll get some other water that's even better, and I go, oh boy, that's good stuff. The taste is very nice. So that's Krishna. You immediately remember, here is Krishna. Ras, the rasa, the taste. And therefore we have some gratitude that Krishna, oh, he's so nice. He's given me nice water to quench my thirst and to revive me. And that is how a devotee grows in Krishna consciousness from the beginning stage. He sees Krishna everywhere. And also here it says Sabdake. I am the sound in ether. So I heard in class this morning, someone asked the question that I was, said I was walking and the girl behind me or somebody behind me was chanting. Did you hear anybody here morning class? He was asking the question, it was irritating me, you know. And I can sympathize with that because I've had people, sometimes people, they irritate me when they chant. I don't know why. And others don't. Maybe it's the way that, I mean, I've heard people, they chant, I'm getting anything down, and it's like, oh, come on, man, you know. So I just move along, you know. I can give you a whole bunch of them, giddy, 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 giddy. And I anyway, Krishna's saying here, though, Sabdake, I'm that sound. So Prabhupada said, even if you hear the dog barking, it's irritating, it's certainly disturbing. You can think, because if you're trapped and you have no way out of that circumstance, just like, I mean, the hardest thing is a baby crying. Or a kid, it's hard to think that this is Krishna's energy, because you just want to throw the baby, especially out of an airplane. But Prabhupada said, yes, atomic bomb can blow up one city, but a baby's crying will disturb the whole world. So I'm only saying what Prabhupada said. So it's very difficult. But every sound, if we hear it, that is a sound that is Krishna has manifested. So although these horns in India would not be allowed in any other country that's developed, maybe some underdeveloped country, but they blow your eardrums out, it's a sound, what do they call it, is a sound pollution. Very, very... It drives people out of this country. I can't take it no more. I can't take a walk, and they beep at anything. And then they come with their high beams on, and you're blinded, and they're beeping, and you don't know where to go. Seriously, we all know this. So Krishna is also the light. He says, I am the light and the fire. I am, he's saying here, Prabhasmi Sasi Sarayayaho. I am the light of the sun and the moon. So some people, they want to find fault with the moon. Fault finders will find fault. They found fault with everything. Remember the lady when she was seeing Prabhupada and she saw he had rings on? Prabhupada had rings because us devotees would give him stuff and he would put it on. He didn't come on the boat to America with a bunch of rings on, you know. He never wore rings, but he accepted the loving mood of his devotee. I gave Prabhupada so many things, and I was very possessive that he wore them. I guess like it, very possessive. And I always would check, is he wearing my thing? And so one day I came to Mumbai, and I brought him a deposit slip of $108,000 that I just put in his account from book sales. So he was sitting on the roof and he was getting massage, and I had brought one watch because I knew he had an affection for Japanese because they had published his Krishna book, and they gave him credit. No one would give credit. They gave credit, and they fixed his teeth while he was there, and they saw him as a genuine saintly person, and they did that because they believed in him. So Prabhupada, I heard him once say, yes, I like this psycho, or so. So I got him the best psycho, and it was a quartz. You know, now everything is quartz, where it jumps. Previously, it was all you had to wind it up, previous to 1975. I think the quartz came out in 73, like this. So it became popular. So I got him the best psycho. And he doesn't like this kind of snap band. Prabhupada didn't like this. He liked the flex bands. You put that on and he would, because he would take massage, he would just slide it off. And it was comfortable. So I took off the band and got an Italian one and had that, and it looked wonderful. And it was the top of the line sequel. That was their best watch at that time. At that time, a Rolex costed only $500. The half gold one, like that one. And the Seiko was almost 400. Although it wasn't, it was gold plated, but. So I brought him that, and then I gave him that, and then he looked at the watch, and his watch had broken the day before. Can you believe? He had a watch that was broken the day before. So he said, my watch is just broken. So I gave him the watch, and I don't think there's nobody in the world I've not criticized at least once. So even Prabhupada on this occasion, I chastised him. He asked me, so? And he looked at it, he said, how much did it cost? Then I said, Srila Prabhupada, it's not polite to ask what a gift cost. And he just smiled. He said, okay. So some years later, a year or two later, a year later, one devotee came from Dubai and brought him a solid gold Rolex. So we go to the morning walk. We were in Calcutta then. And it was winter time, maybe February. Prabhupada had a chatter. And, Calcutta is not very cold, but we need a little something in the morning. And Prabhupada came out and I saw this Rolex on him. And I was thinking, well, if he wanted a Rolex, I would have got him a Rolex. You know, I was thinking like that. So I was like that. And I was looking at that devotee. I was ready to take him out. What are you doing? You know? So the next morning, Srila Prabhupada came out for the walk. He had his chadar around him. And he had the long sleeve kurta on. And then as we came out of his room and we went to the steps to the street down below in Albert Road, you know, the steps. He came down, then we were going to go in the car. Usually he walked at that Victoria Monument, that big castle they made for Queen Victoria, who she never came. Anyway, then probably he put his arm out. He had my watch back on. And then he put it in my face. And he said, satisfied? So I said, yes, I am satisfied. So he wore that watch up till the end, till the last, and he gave it to Upendra, who was, Prabhupada had many servants, Hari Sari, Shuri Kirti, Manoj, who? Nanda Kumar, but Upendra was his favorite. And at the end, he called for Upendra to, when we went to London in 77, and Prabhupada went on, they've tried to force him, somebody, I'm not going to mention him, but he was hounding Srila Prabhupada, take one more trip. Then Srila Prabhupada said, no, bring all the devotees from the world to Vrindavan. And they refused Prabhupada's order. They came out and, we owe the book companies money and the book distributors. They were only calculating dollar and cents, what it would cost, how many tickets. if 1,000 devotees came, and how much would we lose? It was all money. Can you believe that? They don't know Krishna consciousness. They don't know Prabhupada's potency. And now to the day, I've met many, many devotees who hate these people. They wanted one last darshan of Srila Prabhupada, and they lied and said, Prabhupada said, everybody stay where you're at and keep selling my books. And many of them, very disturbed till to this day that Prabhupada called us, and it broke their heart. It just warmed their heart that Prabhupada did call us. You know, they were holding something in their heart that Prabhupada didn't let us come to see him. You know, but he did. He called all the devotees, and a few of these leaders, they got together and told a lie. And the devotees didn't get to come. So they, you know, after hearing that Prabhupada did call them, they felt better. But so Krishna is the sound in the ether. And whatever ability a person has, we can bring it all back to Krishna. That he is the ability in the man, whatever qualifications one has. Maybe you have attained them, though, through your good work. It's not that you just get them. You've practiced. Just like Ravi Shankar. You've heard of that musician, Ravi Shankar? Ask Prabhupada, how did he get like that? And Prabhupada said, 7 lifetimes. 7 lifetimes of practicing and performing for almost nothing. So that's how these musicians, maybe they were singing in pubs for, you know, many lifetimes and not getting paid much, because before this, you know, age of radio sound waves, you had to sing or you didn't make any money. There were no records. You know, there were no royalties. You sang and people maybe heard your songs, and you had to sing the next night. You were an outcast. Basic musicians were outcast. Or they played before the royal family, especially in India with the musicians, if you're good, but it was a lot of hard work. So all of these things, it takes hard work and endeavor, and it pays off. So here in this chapter, you'll see, as it goes on, Krishna explains, you know, different things here. You know, I am your whatever austerity, I'm giving you the strength. We know these verses, but then he comes to Bahunam Janmananante, Gyanavan Mam Prapadyate, Vasudeva Sarvamiti, Samahatma Sidurlaba. And you become a Mahatma. After many births in death, Bahunam Janmananante, again and again and again, you practice bhakti yoga, you come to this. It's just like Prabhupada was asked about his wife. Was your wife a devotee? Yes, Prabhupada said, of course, yes, but not very developed. So there are different, like I said in the beginning, there are different levels of devotees. And some are not so developed, but they are Vaishnavas. They are, except that they are not so advanced. I was discussing this with one devotee yesterday. Well, one mediumly categorized, shall I say, mediumly developed. But he had some anger issue about some of the gurus, the people that are giving diksha, and he said, but they are not realized Krishna. I said, so what? Yes, that is ideal. If you can get a Paramahamsa, Paramahamsa spiritual master, an Uttamadikari, then you take that. But if people have different needs, they need something of maybe more personal. Because if you go around an Uttam, and I've been around more Prabhupada, there are other, his godbrother and so forth, different people who are realized souls, they are not easy to be around. They will take you like a wrestler and slam you to the floor. Your ego. They will smash that ego. Guru means heavy, and people can't take it. I've seen devotees just break down and start crying when they got slammed, because they're not in the mood, and you start thinking he's a nice person. No, he's the nicest, but he's also the master, and he gives correction, and that may be difficult. So they have, people want society, friendship, and love. This is the what people are hunting for. So we have this, some groups of devotees, and they make friends. They have their group, and their guru, if he's an honest person and he guides them correctly, it's very nice. But if he turns it into a cult and he changes the philosophy, and then he starts influencing them in a not a good way, then you have something strange. Then you have a cult. So it is there, and but they deserve it then. You see? Samnam na. They say in the Thai language, Samnam na. Hey, get in here, you rascal.
I'm listening.
They say, this you have done, now it has happened. So if you, Sukriti is only such, and you have so many desires in a different way, and then you will get this type of leader. And you're both satisfying each other. Look at there, and it comes in all stages of life. Because those in the mode of passion, they pick another human being and they worship them. You know, they worship a rock star. They worship a politician. You know, they worship a rich man. And they, you know, and they put the picture on the wall. So, and those who are in the mode of, whose devotion has developed and who are ready, then they get that chance to meet such a Vaishnava after many lives. Bhavanam janmananante. Otherwise, people are progressing and we should be happy for them and encourage them. Don't disrupt the mind of the ignorant, because that will not benefit them. Just like a Christian or a Jew, there were some Jews here last night. 10 Jew ladies from Israel. So they asked me to speak to them, and I spoke to them. And I said, you Jews are very smart. You're the smartest race, because that's a correct statement. I said, but you're a crooked race. That is your disease. You want to manipulate the other jivas. You're never satisfied. Your greed, you want all their money. And you think that you were no different than the caste Brahmins here in India. You know, you're not born in India. You know, you cannot come in Jagannath Puri. And they still think this way in Vrindavan, all the Goswami caste, they have some birthright idea. But that is not according to Bhagavad Gita. Guna karma vibhagasha, Krishna says. According to your nature and your work, we judge you. But they are thinking they are God's chosen. One of the God brothers told me that he was raised a Jew, and he was, you know, he was really doing it. He learned all the Jew mantras and the hop. They do the book thing. They, you know, they rock and all this weird stuff. And you know, he went and got his bar mitzvah, and he had his little hat on and the whole deal. And so the rabbi was told him, because he was only half Jew. His father was a Jew, his mother wasn't. The rabbi told him that you've learned very well. Now I want to take you to Israel. And we can make you a real Jew, because you're not a Jew yet. So when he heard that, then he gave up the Jew thing. He quit. I am not going to be a Jew. What is that? So they have this conception that they're entitled. When one thinks he's entitled, then that is means the duality is there. Sankalpa vikalpa, the total duality, that I am this, you are that. This whole designation and the entitlement conception that I am high, you are low idea. And when that comes in, this is, you know, this is in a position to make aparad to other jivas. As soon as this comes, one has to break down that ego. One should know, I am not this body, you are not from that country. You know, I had a incident once in Australia. I was with Srila Prabhupada and we were traveling to Fiji. So we were traveling to New Zealand. And they were not favorable to the devotees then, so I had to put my my street clothes, or I like to call them karmic clothes, you know, just the regular clothes. But I didn't dress regular. I had a really nice clothes. You know, I had a white suit with a blue silk shirt, and I had a Frank Sinatra hat. I mean, and I had crocodile shoes. Because when I did that, I dressed really nice. And, you know, and when I probably came down the stairs, it was funny, because the Melbourne Temple, his room was like a beautiful room. He came down, it's actually a historical building. Then he looked at me and he said, "You look like a gangster." And so actually I got treated like that at the airport. Because when we went, got our boarding pass, and then the secret or whatever, the special agents from the airport, I guess the police, FBI type or whatever, they took me. So Srila Prabhupada had to walk with me, and he had to sit in a chair outside the door. And they took me in the room, and they said, "Your passport," and there was a table on the table. So I took my passport and I went like that. And it hit the guy in the head. And he became upset. "Why you throw your passport? I thought you were religious people." I said, "If you thought I was religious, you wouldn't have stopped us. You have concluded I'm doing something illegal, and you're disturbing my guru. You have no regard." So after they did their search and everything, they thought I was smuggling money. You know, not drugs or anything, but some money. They have very strict money rules. There was nothing to be found. So when then they try, you know, this ever happens, you ever dealt with police, they try to be nice after they treat you like junk, and then they try to be nice. So he said, "Oh, so I see you've been many places outside of your America," you know, like he already concluded, because everybody thinks their country is the best. No matter how bad it is, no matter how lousy a place they live in, you know, they have affection for, you know, Boma Ijadi, for the land of their birth. Which place is the best? Trying to get an Australia out of me, because that's what I was. I said, "I don't see any difference. Everywhere I go, people are getting up, they're working, they're struggling, they're eating, they're sleeping, they're getting married. The same thing's going on everywhere." So when I came out the room, they liked the answer. When I came out the room, then Srila Prabhupada asked me what happened. So I told him everything except throwing the passport. And he liked the answer. He said, "Very good answer." You know, and then in his purport, a couple of weeks later, he wrote, "The spiritual master becomes very, very proud when his disciple has understood he is not belonging to any country or any place." Yeah. So that is our goal. And I talked to them Jews last night again, and then I said, "What do you Jews?" Because I talked to I talked to this Muslim from Bangladesh, in Bangkok. Before I came, a very educated man. So I said this, and then I asked the Jews the same thing. I said, "What's the difference between, you hate the Jews hate you, you Muslims hate everybody, actually," I told him, "but what's the difference in you, a Christian, a Hindu, a Muslim, what's the difference? They go to the mosque, Hindus go to the temple, they go to the synagogue, they go to the church, but what goes on there when you get there? The same thing. You all bow down or get on your knees or fold your hands and say, 'God, please have my kid pass examination. I need money. I hope my husband gets a raise. Oh, my mother is sick. Can you please cure her?' You're all asking him to serve you. Am I right?" And he started to laugh. He said, "Yeah, that's what we asked for." I said, "They're all asking the same thing. But none of you know who God is. None of you have any idea or conception of what who is that person. And now he started text messaging me, sending me his car. He wanted to meet me in Vrindavan, he said. So that is the way we see things. Everybody, except those who have surrendered to Krishna, they know Krishna knows my needs, and his way is the best way, and whatever happens, and to me in my journey in life, which has been longer than probably most people here, everything that has happened may have seemed negative, but it all turned out positive. Krishna had his plan, and I went along with the plan, and even though it was may have been difficult, because it should be, eventually everything, he was destroying this to make room, get rid of the old and bring in the new. He was arranging. So he takes charge of his devotee, you know. Someone told me the other day, people used to go complain to Srila Prabhupada about me all the time. And he was in the room, and Prabhupada told him, leave him alone, I deal with him. And Prabhupada told me, I told him, I don't like these, my god brothers very much. You know, when Prabhupada was here, you think it was the love boat? No, it wasn't the love boat. We were very neophyte. Most devotees, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 years. Everybody was fighting. When I joined the temple in San Francisco, there was 40 people in a storefront. The temple room was maybe this big. It was thinner. We had one of these doors that the top could open and the bottom would stay closed and people would be outside. And then we had a downstairs. It was a small store. One toilet. 40 people. Imagine waiting in line to go to the toilet with 15 people in front of you. Or being in the toilet, which was worse, and knowing there's 15 people telling you to hurry up. You can't even, it's like, forget it, you know. But then as it went on, there were people learnt some philosophy. They started being able to speak in universities and getting some respect. And then all of a sudden, they thought they were Prabhupada. They thought, oh, I know as much as Swamiji does, you know. And then they, so much fighting over territory. It was, but there was Srila Prabhupada where the buck stopped. You could go and say, Srila Prabhupada, this is happening. And he would say, I will take care. And he would call these things. And what Prabhupada said, you had to accept it for the time being. They may not have liked it, but they would argue. But after he left, you know, I didn't know. You know, when Prabhupada left, we knew he was going to go, but I didn't think he would, because he always said, I can stay 100 years. But he was only 82. But, I mean, so many devotees wanted him out. They wanted control. These are the history of ISKCON. They saw I would go to this country and I'm the GBC and I'll be the guru now. There are all these stories of poisoning Prabhupada you've all heard. I don't know if they're true or not. There's forensic evidence that says it is. But it doesn't matter. He can't be poisoned because his body is spiritual. Just like Prahlad couldn't be poisoned. But if you're at a place and you feel unwanted and somebody wants you to leave, you think, let me oblige them, I will go. So Prabhupada told Puri Maharaj, his godbrother, Bhakti Beba of Puri, Maharaj told him, you have to stay 10 more years. You can be healthy again. Probably. I have done what I can do. They're all hard-headed. And that's what Jesus said. I have taught what I can, and I will leave. So these acharyas come like a flash of light, and they spread their mercy and their knowledge. And those who are fortunate will take that mercy, and they will relish it, and they will get on the train, and they will get on the light beam back to Godhead. And the others, they want to stay here and try to compete. Or, you know, it's like on the road, it's explained. If you're going for a long distance, somebody pulls off to the rest stop to take a break. And maybe he stays there a very, very long time. So we Maya brings us on this road, and we have to back up and go back to the main highway. So Vrindavan is the main highway here. And in Vrindavan, if you're not in the management, keep out of it. Don't agitate your mind. And other people, don't let them bother you. Go to your room and read a book. Don't get involved. To take advantage of what Vrindavan has to offer. And in this way, you can have a gratitude for what Krishna has left us. Look at Krishna. He came. These Jews last night, they couldn't understand that God that somebody could lift the Govardhan Hill. They were looking. I said, that's what God looks like. He's enjoying. And I said, walk in this property. You will not find one unhappy face. Everybody's happy because this is Vaikuntha. And there's no anxiety here, you know? No stress. Everybody's happy. And then they admitted it. Yes, it's very, very, a lot of energy and people are happy here. So this is Vrindavan, and thanks for coming to class. Anybody have a question?
How is the...
Man, blind on this. Huh? Tell your name and where you're from and what the question is.
Hi Krishna, my name is Jita Vrata Das. I'm from Honolulu, Hawaii, well, now Big Island.
He's my old friend and he just came today.
I used to be in Guru Kripa's party in California before the Namahata moved to Japan.
What year?
And that was in
1973. Not 1873.
It was,
we're not that old.
It was too heavy for me to be.
Yeah.
So I didn't stay very long in the park.
I didn't know that. I don't remember. Okay.
My question is, the Om sound isn't the mantra. How is it in the mantra?
Because Krishna is everything. Therefore, Om is included. Prabhupada used to say, if you have a dollar, then 10 cents is included in the dollar. So Om is a representation. It is not a direct, because we have the Om syllable, the Om letter. It's the first letter of the alphabet. This Om, and this is. Our acharyas have described it as Radha, Krishna, and the little flip is the living entities who are dangling, who are moving here and there, who haven't made their mind. So Om is within the Maha Mantra. And therefore, it's like when these, let's see, in Afghanistan when they were blowing up all the Buddhist statues, remember, those it carved in the mountains, some 10 years ago, they went and Taliban was blowing up these things. Then India got involved because they say any religion that uses Om, like the Buddhists also use Om, is considered Hinduism to us. And they were trying to do something about it. But yes, Om is that your question? Yeah, it's within Krishna. Everything's within Krishna. Krishna.
I'm wondering, is it what you chant? Hari Ram, is that
Om is the sound representation of the spiritual energy, the Brahma Jyoti, the sound representation. So it represents. It's a spiritual sound vibration that represents the whole. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachate Purnashya Purnamadaya Purnam Eva Vavsishate. So there it is from the Ishopanishad. Om Purnam. It represents Purnamadaha, the complete whole. Krishna is the complete whole. And within the complete whole, everything else is complete. And if you take away from the complete, it remains complete.
Another question. In the Vaikuntha planets, all the Vishnu forms of Krishna, they carry the four symbols. Two of them are weapons. what is the purpose of having weapons in the spiritual world, in that region?
I don't know. I'm a Goloka man, so I don't care what they do in Vaikuntha. I'm with the cows, and I don't plan on going there. You can have the place.
Those planets are
floating
in the
Brahma Jyoti,
right?
So. Well, that's all coming from the toe of Krishna. Krishna's effulgence is that creating that light, and everything is manifesting from Goloka. So for those that go to the Vaikuntha and the different forms of Narayan there, and I don't know, it's what's going on over there. He's a king, and I don't really pay much attention to what goes on in Vaikuntha.
Like Jaya Vijaya, they were gatekeepers.
Yeah,
Narayan,
yeah.
So they're keeping the bad people out. For Kumaras, they were restricted even.
Not bad people, but he's a king, and therefore they have a king. Maybe some devotees want to go in and see the Lord without asking. I mean, that may happen in the Vaikuntha. It is a place. Lord Brahma, when he finished completing this chapter, four-headed Brahma, Chaturmukh Brahma, when he finished his creation, after he did his tapa, then the Lord empowered him to create all the varieties we witnessed. This is Lord Brahma's doing. The Lord shook his hand, said, "Very good." Prabhupada writes that in Bhagavatam, "Very good." Then he took him to the Vaikuntha, and he showed him vast cities and vast valleys, and it was unlimited. Everywhere you went, it was different color cities. There was no limit to the variety. Here it is a limit. You go to LA and you go to New York, it's, you know, basically the same thing. You know, every place. But there it was unlimited. So Lord Brahma got to see all of these things. So maybe people want to get into the palace, you know, and see the Lord without being, you know, it's just, I don't know, the way things work there. You gotta ask a Ramanuja guy about that. Anybody have an answer? Shuti? You got an answer?
I think it's with the demons.
Huh? There is no demons.
No, when you leave the Vaikuntha,
well,
did the Lord leave there?
Well, Krishna came, but he didn't bring any weapons with him. But Lord Chaitanya did call the Sudarshan when Nityananda was offended. Because these are also his weapons, but he didn't manifest. And Krishna manifested his forearm form and showed these weapons too. So they are expansions of the Lord. Krishna is the original, Ishvara Paramakrishna. He's the original person. And everything is an expansion from him. So in Vaikuntha, they like to play with weapons maybe. I don't know. Never thought about it. Okay, one more. I can find out the answer for you, though. I will find out the correct answer. I'm just kind of fooling around, but I will get to the bottom of it. Yes, sir.
So sometimes many devotees, they try to ask, your wife is devotee or your children are devotee. Sometimes many people try to ask this type of questions. So how we should deal with them?
Tell them the truth. Is your wife a devotee or not? You see, devotee is very widely to understand. Prabhupada dedicates, you know, his Bhagavatam to his father, who was a pure devotee. And then people find fault because his father used to give ganja to all the sadhus. And he kept a hookah in his house. Although he didn't partake in the hookah, that's why Prabhupada didn't have respect for sadhus. But when they said, "Come, we have met this sadhu," he said, "Oh, I've seen so many. My father just brings them in every day to feed." You know, and but he gives them some ganja too. So that to say his father was at fault that he wasn't a pure devotee, because he gave sadhus ganja, that is incorrect. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta used to send his disciples to Vamsidas Babaji If you know the story of Vamsidas Babaji, he was a Pagala, a Pagala Baba. He wandered the banks of the Ganges, and he had a little boat, and he would go down the Ganges. And he lived in his Brahmin underwear, you know? And he had Gornitai deities. And he would never talk to anybody. If he was asked a question, he'd talk to his deities. And then you'd hear, he would tell them the answer. And he used to drink coffee. In those days, not many drank coffee, but he would drink some coffee. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta used to send, although people that had followed the Babaji for 30 years never saw him pass urine or stool. When you're on this level, you can do anything you want. Liberated soul means you do anything you want, because your heart is pure. He used to also, the dogs would come in and let him eat off their plate, his plate. You know the stories of Vamsidas. One day a thief came and stole his plate, and he blamed it on Lord Nityananda. He said, "You've done it. You've hidden these plates, and you're not getting any food anymore." So the next day, Lord Chaitanya's plate came back. He said, "You eat. He doesn't eat." I mean, that is the relationship. They're seeing the Lord. And then, and a few hours later, his plate came back to him. And people used to give him baskets of food, and he just gave everything away. He was a Baba, and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta sent to get that coffee, and all the devotees would relish getting some coffee. You know, so Vaishnavas that are transcendental. And what about Pundarik Vidyanidhi? We all know the story of, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. You know, that he was sitting, he used to sit like a king. He had a beautiful place, and he'd sit in royal clothes, and he'd smoke a pipe. And then one day some devotee came and said, "What's this smoke in a pipe? Why you send me to him?" That was Gadadhar. He was sent there to go become his disciple. "Why am I sent here? This guy's going to be my guru?" And he quoted one verse about the cowherd boys. And as soon as he heard the verse, he just crashed everything and fell on the ground in ecstasy. Then he understood, yeah, this is my guru. They are transcendental. So if you try to copy that, then you, like someone was doing that in Navadvip, and then they got, who was doing that? In Chaitanya Bhagavat. Some charlatan. Haridas Thakur went into some ecstatic trance, and he was rolling on the ground. And then some other fellow tried to do that, and some other people came and started kicking him in the head. He's a fake, because he's imitating. So we should not do that. But like I said, there are many levels of Vaishnava. And those who have the eyes, who are got the heart and the mercy, he can see who's who in the devotional line. That's all. Hare Krishna. Kirtan. Param Vijayate Shri Krishna Sankirtanam.